You want to end violence in America, in the inner city, tomorrow? Legalize drugs. Like that show, The Wire, where they had the New Amsterdam, and that's how they got crime in Baltimore. Yeah. They need to do that in America. You could take a 10-block radius of Kansas City somewhere and have a New Amsterdam. And I mean, you want to talk about gun violence disappearing? You want to talk about drug violence? You want to take the profit motive out of selling drugs? Now you got to figure out what to do with all these people who used to have, you know, manufacturing jobs that could support a family. Now you have to figure out what to do with them, because you look at a place like Detroit, which is never going to have the blue-collar, middle-class jobs that it had, that it's lost. The reality for a lot of those folks who aren't going to get college educated and not be upwardly mobile is they can either sell drugs, go to prison, or catch bullets. They got three options. That's the bigger. I mean, everyone can't join the military to better our lives than we do. You know, I mean, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with what your father did. And a lot of people make that trade-off, and it might benefit them in the end. But I don't know that our military benefits America in its current form, because it's an imperial military. It's the biggest military that the world has ever seen. Ever. And what does it do? Are we talking about defending what makes America what it is? We're ultimately defending, you know, foreign markets for corporations and big money. It's a minute after 2 right here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I mean, it's interesting. I'm glad you see what I'm saying in regards to Mexico and the drug problem because I
see what you're saying. I just feel a little differently than you do. I feel like the military does a lot of wrong. I'm agreeing with you. Yes, we shouldn't be in Iraq. Yes, we shouldn't be in Afghanistan. But the military also does a lot of right. We don't get picked on. We don't get bullied. We don't get invaded. We don't get, you know, just groups of people doing whatever they want to do because we have a strong military.
It's not just the bad
that the military does. You got to also look at what does it stop people from doing because of the strength that we got.
Well, what
stopped
any invading army, at least in the last 100 years, is the armed population, because getting to the shores is one thing. No army on the planet yet, since we've had the contiguous 48 in this landmass of North America, would even attempt to get past the shores, because there would be 200 million armed citizens waiting for them.
They haven't tried that since 1812.
Right.
And you think armed citizen is the way to protect the country?
I'm saying currently as it sits now, if in our hypothetical all the good men stopped joining the military, we would still not get invaded, because there's 200 million plus armed citizens here that would deter the cartels from going any farther than Brownsville or, you know, North Korea trying to hop California.
I don't believe that. I mean, because people are united on the situation.
So, Lamar, you think that the military... Yeah, I want to make sure we're defining which military, because Ben was talking about the Mexican military, the Zapatas? Well, no, not
Zapatas. Zetas.
Los Zetas, okay. But you're talking about the American military and defense and that. We're not using the American military on the border. I mean, are we using... Yes, let me retract that. We are using the military, but that's not like our primary defense down there. It's not like, okay, let's arm the border. If you wanted to take the... What do we got in Germany now? Still in the, and still 25, 30,000 troops? You want to take those troops and say, okay, we don't need to defend Europe. Let's put them on our border to keep people out. Not that that's the real issue for me, but that would be a more legitimate use of the military than having a base in Turkmenistan.
What about our enemies over there?
What enemies? I mean, we're in Missouri, man. We're in Kansas City.
I'm not talking about our enemies here. I'm talking about our enemies abroad.
Okay, what about our enemies over there? They're going to come across the oceans, and they're going to find 200 million armed citizens. So that's not our military that's doing anything to stop them there over here.
Lamar, you got to kind of realize that the world is not America's enemy. There's been something kind of painted about America. The world is jealous of America and wants to be America. It's an emulation thing. It's not that the world wants to steal from America. They want to sit around and they want to watch...
Hang out with you guys,
YouTube videos and drink Cokes. I mean, that's really kind of what the world wants. You know, this idea that America has to be a big paranoid elephant afraid of little mice is just stupid to me. That's it. And I mean, but you know what? I think we're gonna disagree, and that's okay. That's okay. It's not about the people who join the military that are wrong necessarily. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's this idea of what the military gets revered for is wrong. The military is not about preserving and protecting and defending our Constitution. Unfortunately, I would love for the American military to be used for that. If it were truly about defending America from all enemies, you know, foreign and domestic, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, you look at what our wars are fought for, where we go fight these wars, and I don't see any benefit to this country.
I agree with you with the war situation, but I disagree with you when I say that people don't mess with us and our friends as much because we have a strong military.
Yeah.
I think if our military wasn't as strong as it was, we'd have a lot more problems around the globe because of who we are and who our friends are. You know, it's like if you got oil fields in Saudi Arabia, if you're not protecting those, what do you think would happen to them? If there's people out there that say, hey, you know what, I hate Americans or I don't like them this week or somebody killed my cousin or uncle or, you know, they came over and did something last year or 10 years ago, what would happen if America's army wasn't as strong as it was?
I
think there'd be a lot more
Saudi
problems.
We pretty much did leave Saudi Arabia, didn't we?
What's that?
So we pretty much did leave Saudi Arabia, right?
We were invited
out of there.
But, well, I mean, Saudi Arabia is basically armed by America because they have they have the spring and summer catalog to Lockheed Martin.
It's one of our JV teams.
It's a JV team. Lamar, I appreciate your phone call, though, man. I think we heard your point, and I'm sure some people out there agree with you.
All right.
Take
care. Thank you.
And please do keep on listening every week, midnight to 5, right here.
Because it's really... It's putting that together because you wanna believe, man. It's just much easier to, and that's a hard thing for a lot of people, is to kind of go, well, all right, I can kind of see where, you know, it's difficult to not want to believe in the mythology that you're told and you're taught, you know, in history class. And you know, I mean, obviously this gentleman, you know, he was a direct effect of, you know, his father having joined, and, you know, it clearly created his life and changed his life for the better. And that's something you go, okay, but if we're talking about the reality of our situation here in America, the solution is not everyone. I mean, because we're headed towards this. We're headed toward this right now to where are people who are not going to have the requisite tools to advance within our society? What are they going to do with their lives?
Join the military, the Homeland Defense.
It'll be Homeland Defense. The military
right.
will go more drone, robot, especially for the infantry type positions.
What, I mean, an entry level internment camp specialist?
Correct. The zip tie specialist.
And it's a scary thought, but it's, you know, it is.
TSA will be on.
Does look like where we're going.
Amtrak and Greyhound and. Think
and
of all
your
the jobs.
City buses. I mean, they did drills. They did drills back in 2007, I think it was, where the TSA was like stopping people on buses in Cincinnati to check their stuff and their IDs and whatnot to kind of start thinking about.
Can you see your papers, please?
Yeah, man. When you start thinking about, people are ticked off about going to the airport now. Imagine if you couldn't just move about the city.
You're on the radio.
Good Hello. Morning.
Go ahead.
Hey, Ben, this is Clayton. I just want to make a quick point about the last caller was talking about having troops stationed on oil fields. I just want to kind of make a quick point. If we stopped exporting so much oil from our own nation to other countries such as China, we wouldn't have to, you know, guard other oil fields abroad. Instead, just use the oil that we produce here in our own nation.
No, that's absolutely true. But what we fail, and I don't know that Lamar was going at this angle or was aware of this, but the reason why our dollar still buys anything is because we control the global oil supply. And if China wants to buy themselves some crude oil, they want to buy a lot anyway. They want to buy enough to run their economy. They have to have American dollars to do so. And this is something, this is a post-World War II creation. Bretton Woods is part of that. I mean, we're in an advanced state of, you know, Bretton Woods has ended. You know, all these things have ended. But it's the concept of America being the reserve currency because America has denominated the world's reserve of oil. You know, so, I mean, it's one of those things that if it wasn't for that, the Chinese and everyone else wouldn't take our currency for nothing. We wouldn't live in this globalized world that we live in right now. It's a control mechanism that bankers and corporatists figured out, you know, 60, 70 plus years ago.
No, I agree with you. I just feel like if we were able to become less dependent on other oil fields abroad, that we wouldn't have to have our military spread so thin on certain things of that nature.
Yeah, maybe so.
I mean, because I'm a big believer in, you know, I know you'll always have a retort to this, but I'm a big believer in, you know, buying American-made products and keeping manufacturing jobs here in the States. Even though we may have to pay more out of pocket to buy manufactured goods made here in the United States, but typically American-made products last a heck of a lot longer than things that are made in China. So, that to me is a major problem that, you know, people just need to start, you know, reading labels and basically just buying American-made goods.
But we've gotten to a point, sir. I mean, was your phone made in America?
No, it wasn't.
None of the technology that we have anymore is made in America, and that's where we're at.
Right.
I agree. You know, is that board you're sitting behind? That's probably not made in America either. You know, it's probably made in maybe Taiwan or.
Actually, no. I bet
this board might be.
I bet the board is actually made in America.
But a modern radio station wouldn't.
I think it's got a little tag somewhere over there that says "Made in America." Actually.
Anyway, I just wanted to just kind of chime in. I'm in the middle of working here, so I got to get off the phone here. Yeah. But I love the show, guys. You guys you're doing good tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care,
thank you, sir.
And I bet, you know, this board is made in America, but most of the components aren't.
Right.
You know, I bet this microphone that I'm talking to. I'm talking to is made in America, but I bet the mic stand, the little rubber things that hold the mic on.
Right, from the microphone back is not.
I mean,
guys crack me up. You're looking at everything, looking at labels.
I do look at labels. I love it. But it's the reality is that, you know, with the direction everything has been headed, and this is not something that's happened accidentally. This is something that's happened on purpose. Detroit is not an accident. That is a goal that people have. And it's the reality of creating a new, you know, subclass of serfs.
Now, let me back you up on that, but make it clear, because when you say that people have, not the people, not we the people, but them the people, the corporate
globalists
had that plan.
People who put
in place,
and it's this idea. There's always been people that have put profit and money and greed above everything else. These people have always existed. It's just now the game has been accelerated. It's not that we didn't have industrialists who supported Hitler, who helped him out during World War II, who were operating on a semi-global scale. It's just now there's no obstacle to them. The
right.
Government does not have obstacles that used to exist. There's not these trade regulations and embargoes, et cetera, that used to exist. You don't have an organized mass of people and trade unions opposed to this. You have a reality where, starting 25 years ago, these idea of free trade zones and free trade were getting sold to people. And what it has done is absolutely decimated and destroyed the middle class. And this has happened at the same time that our purchasing power for our dollar has been diminished to the point where all we can afford to do is buy stuff that's made by slave labor that comes from the Orient. The Orient. What am I talking about? Asia. You know, the Orient's a big place, and that's kind of an antiquated term. I'm thinking of the Orient Express or something like that.
Worlds of fun, baby.
Right, right. The Orient Express. I mean, where your all your stuff comes from. And, you know, you might feel, I mean, people that use Apple products feel so right on they're using Apple, but it comes from across the street as the same factory that makes the no-name brand that costs a fifth of the price. It's the same exact people. It's the same exact conditions. It's the same exact reality for them. I mean, literally, it used to be you lived on a farm, you needed 10 kids to provide for your reality. You know, a couple of them were going to die, the rest of them were going to work. I mean, you still need that same parity of children. It's just they happen to be in China now, you know. They happen to be all the way over there in the Shanghai, Shenzhou industrial area, you know, slave laboring, you know, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, so we can have our little realities over here. And it's a perverse, bizarre relationship. I don't understand how a DVD player costs like $30, and that's somehow
to
the
make, oh, you, to, no,
to buy. I'm with you.
Right, right.
To buy. And that's, I mean, how is a DVD player fully assembled, you know, in a box at your local, you know, Walmarts?
How'd you cover transportation and manufacturing costs?
And everything else, there's no way you can equivocate that to, you know, what would that be, 7 gallons of gasoline?
Right, and I think that's...
It doesn't make sense to me.
That's one of the components.
Can you get 7 gallons for $30?
No, you can't. No. You can't mail a DVD player to China for $30, but you could buy one. You know, that's just the shipping isn't. And I think
it's a confusing situation, to say the very least.
Right. Well, a lot of this globalization, though the slave wages help, and they are sick and twisted and, you know, like suffering. A lot of this in the death throes of this fuel-based petrol dollar economic system is about driving this trash around. One of the reasons you can't have so much stuff made in America is, you know, because the transportation is the bigger component to a lot of this stuff. The shipping containers, these ports, you know, what's the one in San Diego? Intermodal hubs, like right here in Kansas City. Ensuring the petrodollar has the backing that it does, you have to make sure petrol stays in use, you know, and with the refinement of manufacturing processes, you know, a lot of this is about driving this trash around.
816-931-5534, 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Hey, yeah, I was curious what you guys were saying earlier about the military not being the protector of the Constitution anymore.
It's in Charlotte, just get one. Location.
What's that, man?
That was his scanner in the background. He's also listening to a...
Or a dispatch.
Dispatch.
Yeah, sorry. So
what do you mean?
I was
yeah, go ahead.
Would you like some finer points to back up that concept? Is that what you're asking
right.
for?
Right, yeah. Well,
you
I had just heard you say that when I tuned in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kind of get your input because I feel like the military does... support the Constitution in that we answer to the president. So if there's, you know, if it's the president's policies for the military to be as imperialist as it is, you know, that's really not a fault of anybody in the military. So I was just wondering if I could get kind of your thoughts on that.
But I wouldn't argue that the White House or the office of the president any longer supports the Constitution either.
I would definitely agree with you there. You know, I don't think that the founders could have seen that the president would more or less be elected by corporations and whatnot.
Right. And I don't think the United States.
I believe that they are.
I don't think the United States Congress or the U.S. Senate support the United States Constitution, and I don't think the Supreme Court supports the Constitution.
Right. Since 1947.
It's a universal thing, and I mean, I'm not. I don't think I. To make it abundantly clear. I think most people, I mean, you might have 1% of the criminally insane or whatever that join the military because they want to kill people. I think the vast majority of people join the military because they believe in something, or they're looking for an out and they see it as an honorable way to get out of their community. But a lot of folks do it, and a lot of folks did it after 9/11 for this concept of duty, honor, country, because they wanted to go defend their country. And what people realized very quickly afterwards is that these wars had nothing to do with defending America from terrorists, had nothing to do with defending America's constitution or foundational documents or any of the principles thereof. And it's kind of holding on to an antiquated mythology about our country. You know, and it's, I mean, if we're looking at all, if I can make an argument that all three branches of the government, Supreme Court thinks corporations are people, the United States Congress can't figure out a budget. I mean, how many years has it been since the Congress and the president could agree on a budget that was an actual budget, not something that was $2 billion in the red? You know, and the president thinks that it's okay to kill American citizens without due process. I mean, the National Defense Authorization Act say we can inter American citizens. There's no due process left. There's no privacy left. The First Amendment and the Second Amendment are under continuous attack. So what are we defending? I mean, you know, in Nuremberg, they told the Germans that if you're following orders to kill people, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're running a death camp and you're just following orders from somebody superior to you, what you're still doing is wrong.
And as far as the Constitution...
And they prosecuted them, and those people, some of them were put to death or put in prison for life. And that doesn't... I mean, so this idea of following orders... And I'm not saying that obviously, we're not killing, you know, 10 million people in concentration camps in this country.
Right.
But that argument that I'm just following orders doesn't hold up historically.
And the commander-in-chief is only so in a war setting, and constitutionally it's very clear, regardless of what the founders could foresee or not, that only Congress can declare war. We haven't declared war since the passage of the National Security Act in 1947. Thereby, the president is not acting as commander-in-chief. The whole thing's unconstitutional from hither to yon, and the troops, if they were decent, you know, constitution-abiding Americans, wouldn't follow any of these orders. And not that the military should overthrow the government. They should refuse to do this retarded, illegal, and immoral bidding of them by claiming that we have to do what the president says. But he's only the commander-in-chief in a time of war. Only Congress can declare war. We're not doing that. So the whole thing's just a trash scam, full of killing and corporate greed, planetary-wide, and the troops should be the first one to realize most of that and not fight against it, just refuse to do it.
Yeah, okay, well, I definitely see what you're saying. You guys got some awesome points. I can't say I agree with you all the way, but it's an awesome show, guys. I love what you do.
All right, take care, man.
And, and I would just add that, because we've had two calls who kind of taken what we've said, I don't want to say out of context because they've been listening, right? But out of context in the sense that remember that
they're taking offense is what,
and they're taking offense because they're because they're not realizing the context. Because I think what we're talking about, everything that we've said here in defense of those statements earlier, fits right in line with the commander in chief, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Right, who said, beware the military-industrial complex, who talked about these very things 50 years ago, right, saying that this is what will happen if you don't watch out. And now we're just saying that's what's happened because we didn't watch out. Because we're sitting here going like, well, you got to honor the military. You know, people calling and saying, you know, they disagree with us not honoring the military or whatever. And it's like, no, what we're talking about is the military not being honored, really. I mean, it's not being used, like you said, to defend the Constitution. It's not being used. You know, people are being manipulated and taken advantage of, and then they wave this military flag out in front of us, and we're supposed to go like, hey, you know, we got to have a strong military, so don't question what they're using it
so
for.
So let's fit this a little bit tighter in with this whole idea of deindustrialization, globalism, and the fall of the middle class and blue-collar reality in America, and this Detroitism or Detroitization or whatever we want to call it of America. So in Vietnam, you had a draft army. And literally, you had these local draft councils, people's numbers were put into a bingo thing and flipped around, and if you got your number pulled, you got drafted somehow, somewhere. You know, you wanted a really high draft number. You didn't want one of those low numbers. So what you had was a Democratic force. You had people who were just pulled in. You know, you had your Dick Cheney's got their deferments over and over again. But for the most part, you had a Democratic force in that people just got randomly selected, chosen to be a part of this military. Now, that may have worked to a certain... You had conscientious objectors and people who were anti-war during World War II, but you also had this same draft army that in mass went to go fight that conflict because they felt as though it had, you know, meaning and power and there was something to resist there. Every war that this country's ever fought with a draft army, you've had resistance to. That's the nature of it. What happened in Vietnam is because the war became so futile and pointless and depraved and just... I think people were really starting to, you know, on a level realize once they got over there, especially, that this is unwinnable. There's no point. I mean, there's so many issues with what was taking place in America. There was a social revolution going on. And what was taking place on the ground over in Vietnam, where they were literally, I mean, outgunning, outbombing, destroying that country and not getting anywhere. I mean, the Viet Cong were still holding their own against the United States military, who in 1972 dropped more bombs on that country than the entirety of World War II in Europe. I mean, an amazing show of firepower was unleashed. I mean, yeah, no doubt, was unleashed on that country, and yet the Viet Cong were not destroyed spiritually, and their motivation was still there. They were still willing to fight. So then it got to the, you know, like, we're over there fighting against the communists, but who cares about Vietnam, really? Now we're in Laos and Cambodia, and, I mean, there's drugs. There's so, I mean, a very low sense of morality within the troops. You have all kinds of issues taking place. And what was realized after Vietnam is that you can't fight these unpopular wars with a popular force. You can't have a democratic army fighting a war it doesn't want to fight. I mean, Germany learned that in World War I when they had to deal with communism within their ranks because you had all of a sudden all these enlisted men going, you know what, we're not going to jump over that trench today and go die. So, officer, go, you know, go stick this bayonet where we want to. You know, and that's where, I mean, you had that same thing in Vietnam to a certain degree. A word that's not in the dictionary called fragging. What does that mean? That means killing an officer. It means killing somebody that you don't want to follow their order from. You know, and this notion of having that popular army fight an unpopular war in the end does not work. I mean, you know, the history is replete with this. You know, and you have a certain level of brutality that's taken place. I mean, during World War II on the Eastern Front, the Russians used to have trained guns on their own forces to kill people retreating. I mean, that was the only way to get folks to go out there and fight this war because it was so brutal and so nasty. Clearly, with Walter Cronkite talking about Vietnam every day, you can't do something like that. And it's America, and, I mean, you know, this is an open society. You can't do something like that. And I don't know that people necessarily would, God forbid, want to do something like that. But you can't have a popular force fighting an unpopular war. It doesn't work. So, middle 70s, late 70s, they get rid of the draft in, I think, 1975, 1976. Coinciding with the end of Vietnam, the draft goes away. That's right in the middle of the beginning of deindustrialization. Now you have an all-volunteer force, and the reality then becomes is that you have to, do something now that you don't have your... These manufacturing jobs are starting to go away. You have a volunteer force. A volunteer force has an entirely different dynamic than a popular army that's drafted. Entirely different dynamic. And that's where we are today. That's what, you look at the history of a war like Vietnam and what it created, this all-volunteer army. You have people who are volunteering to be in the army, and sure, duty, honor, country is a part of it. And certainly after 9/11, that was a big part of it. But I don't know that that's the main motivation for people to join the military today. I mean, the military still has plenty of enlistment. I mean, there was a point at which the military had to stop enlisting people because they had too many applicants. I mean, it's not necessarily duty, honor, country that motivates people to enlist today. It's opportunity. It's they have commercials for the Army. They've had commercials for the Army on the TV since the 80s.
But remember, even in the mid-2000s, they had to do some numbers games because I remember talking about how they lowered their goals. So that they,
what did they lower?
First, they were like saying, well, we're not meeting our recruitment goals. And then they lowered their recruitment goals. And then the next year they came back and they said they were surpassing their goals.
They lowered requirements for who they could enlist. Now you didn't need to have a
right
high school
in order
education.
To increase.
Now you
the,
didn't have
the,
to have a clean record. There's
yeah.
all kinds of things they started changing. They lowered, you know, your ASVAB requirements, and they did all these things. People that normally wouldn't have been admitted into the military in the 80s and the 90s were now getting into the military. You know, and that's
right.
that's a reality
right,
of that as well.
Right, because they saw we got to fill these ranks.
Well, that and you're pulling from a deeper, you know. Segment of society. You're digging a little bit deeper into it. And, you know, no doubt, a lot of good people that join the military, I'm sure. I'm not saying that there aren't. But you have a lot of people who have no other choice in their life. I mean, it's literally, I'm going to try the military, and if they don't take me, I'm going to AmeriCorps. And if AmeriCorps, I mean, you want to talk about a joke of a thing. And I know the military is a little more serious than AmeriCorps is, or a lot more serious than AmeriCorps is. But man, I mean, you think AmeriCorps does anything positive for anyone out there at ever at all? Jesus Christ!
I mean, isn't that like just a CIA front?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know the it could be. I don't know. Jake's not piping up, so it's probably not. But the broader point being is that, you know, this idea of service to the country, you know, when the country is not serving the citizens in its own actions, how is participating within the bureaucracy of that country going to affect anything? I mean, the country's broken, okay? Everyone knows that. I mean, for the love of God, you're not going to accomplish much of anything by participating within the current system, unless you're a Koch brother, unless you're one of those guys that that's down there in Wichita, Kansas, and you have billions of dollars to support political causes, because, I mean, literally, the only way to do this is by taking the money out of the system. And how do you do that? You'd have to pass legislation to do so, right? Okay, now that sounds kind of difficult.
Because the congressmen are bought by the money.
And I know that there are good people on the state and local level, and I know that there are good politicians on that level because the stakes aren't nearly as high. The money's not nearly as big. But we have an extremely centralized government now. You know, how do you overcome that? And I'm not sitting here complaining. I'm not sitting here whining without the purpose of offering up, you know, no solution whatsoever. But the only way to even begin to solve any of this is to remove the money from it. And I don't. How do you convince somebody with $1 billion not to spend it? When the Supreme Court has given the green light to do whatever you want with it,
and when you've convinced millions of everyday Americans that is their right to amass and to spend that money in that way, and that is their you know, we have a duty to protect their ability to control the government, then, you know what I mean? That, because that's where a lot of people come from. I mean, they get bent out of shape and upset that you would even talk about a redistribution or a changing of the rules or any of that stuff, that you have an obligation to play by the rules of America, even though we can kind of look at it and go, like, hey, that game is kind of stacked. And we're not supposed to decry that and look for a better way. We're supposed to just accept things the way they are. I don't know if that makes sense. But that's where we kind of find ourselves. You have to just accept that this is, you know, this is the this is the right way. I mean, this is America. I mean, obviously, we're the best, the number one country in the world. So if this is how it's done here, then shut up and...
But, I mean, really, ultimately, what needs to really fundamentally happen, people need to get disillusioned and give up on the system.
Right. And realize that we're not number one because of this, that, or the other thing.
I like to get this guy to agree with all my pessimism over here. It's not pessimism. It's realism.
It is.
No, but get disillusioned and give up on the system. I mean, listen to that. What am I saying? I mean, or what you can do is you can join a Facebook page, or you don't join Facebook pages. You can like a Facebook page of a political action. You can follow some Twitter accounts. You can write your congressperson. But make sure you include really large checks with that letter to your congressperson. And you can also organize political rallies that nobody will pay attention to. You know, you can do all those things. Or you can get disillusioned and give up on the system and start living on the outside of it. You have a choice there. And I mean, that sounds so bleak, doesn't it? But it's worked out pretty well for you, hasn't it, Jake?
I'm loving it.
All right, good. You know, it's not the worst thing for everybody. And realize the most revolutionary act you can do out there in the whole wide world is raise your children to be human beings. Forget about joining the military. Take care of your damn kid. And figure out a way to do it that doesn't involve joining the military. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. There's been a couple of studies. There was a study just released. This is a genius study. I can't believe somebody, hopefully the government spent money on this. Let me get this up real quick. No, that's not it. Teenager held a sex slave. No, that's not it. Here we go. Study. Children's poor motor and social skills linked to too much television watching. Imagine that. Too much TV watching. It's bad for children. Did you know that, Mike? The American Association of Pediatrics says that you should only let your kid watch 2.5 hours of TV a day if they're over 2 years old. Before that, no TV whatsoever. 2.5 hours TV a day is all you should let your kid watch.
What are you supposed to view Baby Einstein on then?
Didn't Baby Einstein, there was a class action lawsuit where a bunch of people bought Baby Einstein stuff and their kids still turned out stupid and they sued them? I might not have that story completely correct.
They
but
were
kids not
geniuses.
In the television class.
Cause have you ever seen that
and
Baby Einstein stuff?
Tom.
It is kind of ridiculous. But imagine that. You know, the American Association of Pediatrics comes out with a study saying that letting your kid watch TV is bad for his motor skills and his social skills. No doubt. Really? Duh.
Right.
I mean, what is it? I mean, a kid is this extremely investigative, curious, wanting to put my fingers in everything. I mean, how often have you had, if you have a kid out there, do you have to remove your kid's hand from his own feces? Right? The kid, you know, I gotta touch it and I gotta smell it and maybe I'll get an opportunity to taste it depending on how quick my parents are to realize, oh my God, this is crap, you know, that I'm holding. I mean, there's only one way to learn that. You know, Baby Einstein can't teach you that. But it's you got to go out there and you got to do this stuff. And if the kid is, you know, it's like, because we don't have a TV at the house, but we do have computers, right? And watching, especially the baby, freak out at the computer, because you know how people look when they're looking at computers? Like zombies. The baby comes over. If you're reading the newspaper, the hard, the newsprint version of the newspaper, The kid doesn't come over trying to swat the newspaper out of your mouth and, you know, press a little out of your hands and, you know, pressing all over it and doing all these other things. I mean, have you ever seen a baby attack a computer or a have you seen the children with the cell phones? I mean, like, we don't have a cell phone either, but people come over to the house, the kids inevitably see people with cell phones. I mean, the way they act towards cell phones is pretty amazing. I mean, it really, truly is, because, you know, they watch adults. Kids are these little things that start off, I believe, completely pure, and they're, you know, they're designed to follow the lead. You know, if they're around a bunch of, you know, zombies, then that's what they're going to be. So, I mean, it's just like one of those situations. We're watching, literally, humanity backpedal a little bit, maybe a lot. I don't know how far back. Where you have, you know, it's a combination of 1984, A Brave New World, and Idiocracy all rolled up into one. You know, we're confused about what to do, and it's just we keep getting worse. Because there's no solution to it, because we can't get out of what has caused this problem in the first place. And most of this is our perception of ourselves being based upon media. I mean, that's what we're told. It's like, I realize that if I don't read the stuff that says that, you know, the government's going to start interning people tomorrow and the economy's about to collapse, I have a better day. Because, I mean, I don't know who those people are. And, you know, there's some truth to some of those concepts, and maybe you should be wary of that at all times. But it's like, you know, a little Bill Hicks joke. So watch CNN. Murder, rape, AIDS, famine, warfare. Murder, rape, AIDS, famine, warfare. And you look outside, and it's just the sound of crickets chirping. You know, we have a perspective on ourselves that's based upon stuff that we see that's external from our reality. And it becomes an emotional-based thing that we have to feed into. We don't feel like we know what's going on unless we look through that little tube that's just programming anyway to see what's taking place on the outside of the world, when the actual world that we live in is the one that's right before us. But it's, you know, while corporations and governments and everything else have become globalized, so have we. Brings me back to my baby, you know? Not supposed to let the... It's bad. For social and motor skills, to let your children watch TV all day. To sit on a couch and zone out to two-dimensional objects. Unless you're, you know, some of them rich folks out there that got that 3D TV they got at Costco. Then you're letting your kid, you know, zone out to three-dimensional objects. Kinda. I mean, see what I'm saying? The American Association of Pediatrics comes out with the study, and now people are like, wow, that must be true. But it's just, think about it. Is that really that hard to understand? Letting a kid watch 2.5 hours of TV a day seems like an awful lot anyway. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Seems like a whole hell of a lot.
But I think people have slipped into that over these years. So, you know, you say just think about it, but see, you kind of remember when it wasn't that way still. I think we're in that generation that, I mean, there's people now who have kids that are 10 and 12 years old who their whole life they've had this stuff there at their, you know what I mean? Like, you remember when there were three channels. You know what I mean? You remember pre-cable world, right?
No, not really.
Well, see, sorry, people in your generation, once again, people in your generation, right, are not going to even, they don't, the 24-hour news cycle,
I mean,
all
there
that
was
kind
always,
of stuff has always been part of their reality.
I don't remember a world before Channel 41 and 62. I don't actually remember a world before Fox.
Wow.
I remember when
Fox was only on Friday. Yeah.
And I remember that. I remember when Fox was only on Friday and Saturday night. But, I mean, I don't remember a world before the Tracy Ullman show, really. I mean, if I really tried, but then I'm just going to run into MTV or something.
Right.
I'm going to run into a Thriller video in my memory.
Right.
Going back.
Right, which means it was there. So, yeah, I mean, it's
No, I grew up with the TV on all the time. The TV was a member of the damn family.
Right.
It's like a sickness that I had. And it was.
But that's why people don't just know it. I mean, you maybe got... You know, count your blessings, you, for whatever reason, are contrarian as it relates to the television and
a lot
that
of
being
other things,
in
actually.
In your, well, yeah, like, even with, like, the cell phones and stuff. And it's like, But those of us who are addicted, sorry to say, I can see not realizing or not having taken the time to realize that it's not good to let your kid watch TV all day long.
Well, because you do it.
Right.
And it's just like, why do parents feed their kids Diet Coke?
Because they're drinking it. Yeah.
Why do kids get to eat all kinds of junk food all the time? Because that's what parents are eating. That's the whole thing. I mean, it's just, and we just lose sight of it. I mean, it's weird for me to see, you know, we're at a park today north of the river. Do you know north of the river is like a whole nother town up there?
It's a little freaky up there. It's not a good thing.
You know, there was a opinion in the Star written by one of the former Charles Coulter, one of the former, I've never heard of this guy before. I'm not a devotee of the Kansas City Star, but he's essentially saying, why doesn't Kansas City have a Martin Luther King Boulevard? And then he goes on to say, wouldn't it be the best thing ever if we renamed Troost Martin Luther King Boulevard? He goes on to say, nobody even knows who Benoit Troost was. Nobody even knows who this guy
right.
was. You know, he's one of the founders of Kansas City, actually. But nobody knows who this guy was. He was a doctor also. But nobody knows who this guy was. But we should name Troost Martin Luther King Boulevard, because Troost has become synonymous with low income, drug, violence, criminal, murder,
prostitution.
You know, property, yeah, prostitution,
division.
Property. And what better way to change that perspective by naming it Martin Luther King Boulevard, which, as Chris Rock pointed out, is synonymous with every other town in this country that's got one. Martin Luther King Boulevard is the same thing as Troost. It's just named Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Right.
So then I got to thinking, would they name Troost north? Because you go up north of the river, and they got all the same damn street names. You can stand on the corner of 39th and Troost, but the bus doesn't roll down that road.
Right.
You know what I mean? Would they name Martin Luther King Boulevard up north of the river? Would they rename Troost Martin Luther King Boulevard up there? And then I really got to thinking. Oh, man, I was doing some serious thinking. Ward Parkway, the new Martin Luther King Boulevard in Kansas. How badass would that be? It certainly would mess up property values a little bit, you know.
Start getting some protest rallies.
Yeah, that Ward Parkway shit. Because who the hell is Ward?
It's like, wait, I thought you guys were a bunch of liberals. Hey, you're taking it too far there, buddy.
Ward Parkway, the new Troost, or the new Martin Luther King Boulevard. Because, I mean, the Parkway Boulevard, same deal, you know? Same deal. But, no, I was up north of the river, and I'm just blown away. I don't know why I got sidetracked into that story. I wanted to bring that up. And
change Barry Road to Martin Luther King?
No, Barry Obama Road.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Cousin Barry With Boulevard. Me? Yeah.
They'd start having them running out of the bulls up there.
No, it's just being at a playground and just observing the obesity. It's just interesting to me. And just seeing the kids that you just look at them and you just go, man, it's sad. This kid's like 12, 13 years old. He's real overweight. He's got that big old spare tire thing going on. And he's at the playground with his younger siblings, and he's got, like, you know, the computer, and he's just kind of walking around with his computer, and just sad to me, you know? It's like these kids just doing what they see. You know, there's no reason why it should be like that. I drank soda pops and ate candy bars when I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't, you know, husky. I mean, right? You know? Do you remember eating sweets and candy and having soda pops? Or were you a big kid?
I after puberty, I just became overweight.
Yeah.
I mean, I was real skinny up until I was like 11, 12 years old, and then all of a sudden, bam, it was.
I mean, you're a big guy, but you're not, you know,
average.
I don't think you're not real overweight right now.
Right, I would say slightly bigger than average.
Right.
Which allows me to pretend like it just happened. Whoa, how did that happen?
I mean, you know, right, your size is not unhealthy.
Right.
You know, you look like you could.
It is, but not. Comparatively speaking.
Mike, you could be at a Whole Foods, and I would be like, what the hell is that guy doing here?
Right.
Is he lost? Sir, the Walmart is down the road.
Right.
You know what I mean? Were you a big kid, Jake?
I mean, I don't remember. Look
at some damn pictures and get back to me, man. You should be able to figure this out.
No, yeah, we had plenty of sweets and pops, but it was, you know, we had to get our bikes. Yeah, get our bikes.
Hey, you remember that, though? I mean, it seems like soda pops were always around. Candy bars were always around.
No, you're right. You get on your bike and you ride a couple of blocks or whatever to the store, whereas now it's like you hop in the back seat and mom takes you to the store and then you whine all through the grocery store until she gives you some candy. I'm just talking about my house. But you know what I mean? It's that's what happens. I mean, my kids, I don't want to throw my kids under the bus because they do walk a little bit to go get their candy and pops. But you know what I mean? It's my kids are more active than what I think the norm is anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I think there's also that effect that the same thing that you were saying before can hold true for us as far as thinking that things are worse than they are, although not really, because we statistically we know.
I'm afraid to let my kid have a soda ever. I'm telling him a story the other day. We're on this, but me and my boy, my oldest, always take these bike rides. We did 40 miles of the Katy Trail on Thursday.
Cool.
7-year-old kid did 40 miles of the Katy Trail. That was round trip. Proud of that dude for doing that.
Yeah.
And then when we were done, he wouldn't stop riding his damn bike. And we got back to this little town we were in. We started in Boonville and went to Rocheport and then went past Rocheport and then came back. Got back to Boonville, had some food, and then he wanted to keep riding his bike around the town. I'm like, nah, dude. We got to put him up. And he's like,
they get this energy sometimes.
And I'm just like, all right. I've pushed him to ride his bike so hard, and now he doesn't want to stop. I guess we have to ride around Boonville now. My ass is tired.
Right.
My legs are sore. My butt hurts. But I'm going to ride around Boonville with him. We did. But I'm afraid to let him have soda. You know, I'm just like, yeah, he's going to, you know, he's going to balloon up. But then I realized, like, but he drinks water all day every day.
Right.
You know, I mean,
he's getting those habits that are
he likes water.
Good.
You know, the scariest thing I've ever heard somebody say is that I don't like the taste of water.
That's not an uncommon thing.
Depending on what tap it came out of, it may be a true statement.
Yeah, no, right. But any water, I don't like the taste of any water. Or I don't like the flavor of air. Have you tried the flavor of air?
It smells like oxygen in here.
Do you like the warmth of sunshine? Do you like that?
So I thought I was going to get arrested this week because. Because my kids were at home and my oldest was gone, so we had like a childcare thing, so I had the kids, and so I was taking the wife to work, and to get there we passed Loose Park, and there are people walking, running around, and so my sons, the two youngs, 8 and 11, were like, we want to go run around there. Well, I've got a problem right now with my foot, so I can't walk all the way around Loose Park or whatever. So I let them out, and they wanted to do this like 3 times this week. They wanted to run around the park, and they wanted to actually run the whole thing. And there's no way I'm letting my kid run all the way around unsupervised because I just don't trust the society anymore. But so I kept going around the block and being like ahead of them to watch them. So there's all these girls running around. And then I'm like going like, so I get up ahead of them so I can see them running up, which means I'm like where this girl's running. And then my kids come, they pass me, so I drive around again to get ahead of them, which puts me in front of the same girl who's looking at me like, I'm only thinking, she's like, why is this guy following me? And then like, looking and like making hand gestures of like good job and you know kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
There you go.
None of your kids were at the park, were they?
No. Well, see, and that was I just knew that somebody was gonna like be like, there's some weird dude following. And then even when I would talk to my kids, because I'm a large, light skinned but a black man, and my kid is blonde hair, blue eyed, and I could just see somebody misinterpreting a guy in a van rolling up to a kid. Saying something to him and then driving off and...
Especially with a limp.
Right. So yeah, I just thought that was funny. But I was extremely proud of them because they were, like, wanting to run. And then the oldest of the two was, like, he wanted to beat his time. each day. Like he was like, can you time me so I can you know go faster? And I just was like
right.
real jazzed by that because that's not exactly the norm anymore. Not that he's not prone to having fits when he can't watch Disney Channel, but.
Might have it balanced
but
out.
But you know? It is a balance of some sort.
I mean, in you know, reality, if you watch TV, it's not like you can tell your kid he can't watch TV.
Right. Because it's hard when you, yeah. Because at 11, they get rebellious and they start saying, well, how do you get to do that? And it's like, I want to teach you to be a thoughtful, thinking, present citizen. It's real hard to then say, because I said so. Because that's what Obama's telling us.
Right.
Right? He's like, hey, it's safe because I say so. Don't worry about the Fourth Amendment rights. Don't worry about this or that.
Yo, man, that dude ain't no patriot.
You know, but, so it's hard, because then you got to actually justify your kids. And then you just say, shut up, you're not watching it.
Because the because I said so argument doesn't work unless you hit them. Right?
It does rapidly
you have to
come to mind. It's
I
like,
don't
you
know. I don't hit my children, but I'm just saying like the because you know the whole because it's the way it is, that doesn't work unless there's the fear of them getting you know
right. It's the way it is, or you're gonna get knocked out. Right.
They have to be afraid of you, and you know if you.
I mean, I take things away from them to get them to that point too.
But that doesn't make them afraid.
But
of
that
you.
Doesn't.
You have to make them fear you for those things to work, and that's now we're talking about fear-based mind control. And if that's the way, I mean, you know, you want to
yeah,
be a little.
Yeah, if you teach them that fear-based mind control, then
you
want to
be a little mini
to
dictator
it.
To your. I mean, you have to be a benevolent dictator to your children. I mean, they need rules, they need structure, but you can't. It can't be about fear-based mind control, right?
All right.
And it shouldn't anyway.
Yeah, you will fear me.
Because kids are supposed to manipulate and try to flip everything you say back around on you. That's their job.
They do. They do.
That is their job.
They do it well. At least mine do.
But if they're yeah right, if they don't do it well, then you know that's when you should go get your kid put on drugs.
It's like he does everything I tell him.
Yeah, he's like this
There's
sweet little guy.
Obviously something wrong with him.
You should have seen how well he did the dishes last night.
Well,
made his dinner. He put himself to sleep. Brushed his own teeth. He was giving me. Big lecture about cavities and how I need to floss more. He needs to be put on something, Doc. I don't know what it is.
Although sometimes they do that. They get the whole... Because they get the school lectures constantly about things, and so they, you know, they make these judgments about people who smoke or about, you know, whatever. You know, they make these... I can't think of any right off the top of my head, but they make these matter-of-fact... yet outlandish statements, you know, or outlandish statements in a matter-of-fact way. Like, you know, it's like, you know, he shouldn't smoke. He's going to die when he's 30. Like, no.
Right.
It ain't quite that simple, little buddy.
I think we should have, before school officially starts for everybody, just a Children of Paragon night. Just get them all in here sassing us on air.
I should have brought mine in last week then, because they start today.
Oh.
How crazy is
what?
That?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I feel like, you know, over the years I've gone like, I kind of remember we started earlier or we started later than this, and but
August
not remembering because it was so long ago. It is clear to me now that this is earlier.
You know, it used to start the day after Labor Day.
Right. That's what I remember. And then it was like, a couple of days in August. I mean, it's really not that big of a deal. And then it's like the 24th.
Yeah, they've been pushing it up.
And then, like you said, now it's the 12th. And I'm like, no way.
Yeah, it used to be the day after. I remember that because you go to Spirit Fest, and that was the last hoorah. They don't even have Spirit Fest anymore. But that was the last hoorah before school started again. Now, of course, we didn't get out when those suburban districts did either. I mean, we get out in the middle of June or something.
Right,
we had snow days.
Right. Yeah, it's all very different now. I mean, they were out pretty much from the end of May, so all of June and July and a couple of weeks in August. So it's still 10 weeks, 10 or 12 weeks, but...
Yeah, it really feels like summer's
seems
over.
Different.
So even though summer goes on for another month and a couple of weeks.
Because that's the other thing is, like, I've had, like, some foot problems this last month, and so my kids are all, like, freaking out because I got some tickets to Schliermann that we're going to go and...